You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
I remember the story quite well because I was in my office having a fairly normal day when in burst Nancy. Now, I'd seen Nancy before, but I'd been seeing Nancy for some minor depression and some trying to adjust to life kind of issues that hit a lot of adults. This time, Nancy was in a panic. Nancy was telling me that she felt like her marriage was about to collapse and she didn't know what she could do. Her husband had walked in and said, "You know what? This isn't working. I'm not happy. You're not happy. I love you. I care for you." But then he said that phrase that many people have said to me, "I love you, but I'm not in love with you." Nancy was heartbroken and desperate. She never knew their marriage was so bad. In fact, she told me that she thought that they were just on pause. And I remember that phrase so well. She said, "You know, I thought we had just paused our relationship." Here's the problem. There is no such thing in a marriage as a pause button. There is no such thing in any relationship as a pause button. But what happens? What's the background? What gets us to that point of thinking it's going to happen? Well, when you get married with full of promise. You stand there having this wonderful ceremony and having this great event. And by the way, if you haven't seen the research shows that there's an inverse relationship between how expensive your marriage was and how long your marriage will last. And I think the reason is because the more expensive it is, the more of a fantasy it's creating, the more of this place of promise there is. Now, every marriage should start with promise. Every marriage should be going in with all of this passion, all of this possibility, and all this promise. In fact, I think that's the hallmark of the beginning place of a marriage. Promise of what the future holds. Everything is new. Everything is possible. Everything can happen. But the problem is that in the midst of that promise, there's a lack of an execution. There's a lack of a clear understanding of what marriage is about. In fact, if I were to say there's one thing that's really wrong in America and marriage, it's not about the divorce rates, because I think that's only a symptom of one other thing. It is about the fact that people get married and don't understand what they're signing up for. It's not that they shouldn't get married. It's that we haven't prepped people on what that's about. Nancy's like you and me and almost everybody else that get married. They get married without an instruction guide. You know, they have this nice ceremony. They have a nice reception or a dinner or some party. People pat them on the back, wish them well, and off they go to figure it out. But they've never been in a relationship like this before, even if they saw their parents. If their parents were having a successful relationship, a lot of that relationship was invisible to them. If their parents had an unsuccessful relationship, they only know what they want to avoid. Nancy came from a broken home, but she was sworn to the fact that she was going to make a relationship work. Her husband came from an intact family, and he felt like they could do this too, that they could work through anything. So there they were, starting with promise and passion. They loved each other desperately and were always attracted to each other. And then there was this great possibility of what's down the road. New jobs, new kids, all of these great things that were coming their way. Now let me ask you, does that sound familiar? Does that sound like the beginning place for your marriage and probably almost every other marriage around? You see, marriages don't fall apart because people promise to let it fall apart. Marriages don't fall apart because people at the beginning say, "You know, I don't know how this will work, but let's go ahead and jump in." People jump into marriage because they are convinced that they are going to beat the odds. People congratulate them and say, "Great, go have a great life," and off they go to have a great marriage. Not much instruction attached, not much help attached, but we're supposed to create something, something you might not have even known you were doing. And then along comes life. Along comes life for almost everybody. I remember when my wife and I got married, 1 week later, we were both enrolling in graduate school. We were signing up for classes 10 days after we got married. So we got married, had a short honeymoon, and jumped into life. And boy, it was full force life. We were trying to figure out how to pay the bills and how to be in school and how both of us could also have jobs, our studies, and time for each other. And we were struggling. But most couples are at that point. And this is where it gets a little bit twisted. We have a choice to make at that point, and most people find that reality comes in and pulls us away from the thoughts about the promise and the passion and the possibilities. So reality comes crashing in. There is life that has to be lived. That fantasy world that we imagine married life's going to be is replaced by the reality of a house that has to be taken care of, a job that have to be attended, things that have to be done. And then along come the responsibilities. And boy, you know, I talked to my daughter. She said, you know, college would be great if it wasn't for the classes. Married life would be great if it wasn't for life, if it wasn't for all the things that get in our way. But for pretty much all of us, the realities of life come in. We have to go to work to make some money so that we can support our lifestyle, whatever that lifestyle looks like. Often we have kids that come along sometime in the first few years of marriage, and suddenly we have the responsibilities of parenting, of trying to raise these kids into something that would be great, some kids that are going to be great adults. So we have this great burden of that. And then a lot of times parents at about that point are aging and needing more assistance, and things are pulling at us. And then there's just life in general. We have interest, we have friends, we have all of these other pieces that are pulling at us. And then there's relationship stuff. First, the relationship of the marriage. Probably it doesn't go exactly how you thought it would. Probably there's a little more struggle to it than you had imagined there might be in the marriage, because you had convinced yourself that you had it down. We all do. That's what we all do walking into marriage. And then there are those friends, those other people that we want to be around. And you might have friends jointly, you might have them separately, but they pull at us, right? Because we want to spend time with them and have activities with them. And suddenly all of those other pieces of life begin to pull us away from the marital relationship. And then there are the times when there's somebody else that catches somebody's eye. And usually that comes as a result of the fact that the pause button has been hit. So relationships never pause. Let me go back to that idea that there is not a pause button for a relationship. They are either growing or they are receding. That's the only two things it can do. They are either on a growth path or a path spiraling slowly downward, sometimes even quickly downward. When you hit pause, it creates stagnation. And stagnation in a relationship is about decline. That's the problem with this. The system, the growth system, the life system of a marriage is either constantly creating a new basis and finds a new path of growth, or it begins to stagnate and things begin to rot and things begin to smell bad and things begin to feel bad. It's either one of those two things. There is no pause. We act as if there is. So why is it that we can't just pause a relationship? Nancy told me that she always thought that they would get back to their marriage. She thought that they would go and travel and reunite with each other, have a second honeymoon, and start their life together after the kids got out of high school and went to college, after the kids got to a certain point in life, after they got their jobs, their career paths on where they wanted them to, after they had accomplished these, you know, athletic things that both of them wanted to do. Her husband wanted to do triathlon. She wanted to do tennis competitions. They had a very busy life, but a very separate life. And Nancy had the belief that as the kids grew older, there would be some point when she would say, now it's time for us. And as their careers got going, there would be some point when they both could say, now it's time for us. And that they both would get to do those extracurricular activities and then one day say, now it's time for us. But in the meantime, something was happening under the surface. What was it? Well, a couple of things. One, connection is the lifeblood of a marriage. Feeling connected with each other, having some sense of emotional connection, a physical connection, and spiritual connection is what links us together. And that connection is built into our DNA. Humans are built to be in relationship. Humans are built to need that relationship, to need that connection. And so when we don't get that in our primary relationship of marriage, we start looking for it somewhere else. Maybe we're overly involved with the kids to get that connection, or we're overly involved at work to get that connection, or some other outside group or friends, or unfortunately, sometimes affair partners, because the connection, the lifeblood of the marriage isn't pumping. It's gotten stuck. The heartbeat has begun to weaken. The heartbeat has begun to stall a little bit. And so the circulation of the marriage, the connection is not what it needs to be. It's not supporting the life of the spouses. So there's not just stagnation, but there's a decline that's going on. And then there's the fact that there is that sense of we that is necessary. I talk about this in my Save the Marriage system, where what you're trying to build in a marriage, unbeknownst to most people who get married, is a sense of being a we, of being a team, of having each other's back, of having a sense that you're all in it together. Now, this is not about losing who you are as individuals. It's about creating something bigger as a team, of saying you can stand up and be something greater by joining together. That's that place of being a we. Now, there are opportunities to build that sense of we throughout a marriage. But if you've hit the pause button, it's not happening because the habits and the choices that lead to we aren't there. For instance, the habit of catching up with each other and letting each other know about each other's challenges, and the choices of how you manage money and how you manage sex and how you manage parenting and all of those other pieces where you can either stand together or begin to fall apart. And as we miss that opportunity, as we miss those habits and those choices, being paused actually causes us to reduce that sense of we. You draw back to a you and me. And what happens whenever there's you and me and not we is it will eventually become you versus me. And so instead of building a sense of we, instead of even being able to manage that pause button of you and me, you end up with that place of conflict of you versus me, which is based in a lack of connection, a lack of being a we, and it becomes very oppositional. Each person finds that they just can't make progress and they can't get the other person on board and they can't find a way of joining together. And so conflict begins to eat at the core. So what happened with Nancy? Well, Nancy was distraught. I finally got her calmed down and helped her realize that something important had happened. Her husband had told her something very crucial about their marriage. It was not where it needed to be. It was in trouble, but it wasn't on the verge of dying. It was just on the verge of having some real circulatory issues. That there was a need to get some oxygen back in here and get the circulation going and getting things moving again. So I coached Nancy for a number of months to get things moving. There are some things that she did that I think helped get her to the end result she wanted. The first thing is I told her not to do a complete 180. A complete 180 is when you do exactly the opposite of everything you've been doing. So if you've left out your spouse, you suddenly include them in everything. If you've been a little standoffish, you're suddenly all over them. You know, whatever it's been, you suddenly move from no connection to glommed onto them connection. The problem is it scares off a spouse that's kind of gotten used to where things are. May not like where things are, but has kind of gotten used to it. So if a spouse is feeling disconnected, to suddenly have a spouse pursuing causes them to run away. And that begins to cause additional problems. So the last thing we need to do at this point is suddenly do a 180. We have to kind of slowly turn it. I often think about the difference between how you turn boats. My son and I, when we were at the beach this past summer, rented some jet skis. And if you've been on a jet ski, you can fly down the water and then suddenly do a turn. And it's kind of fun and exhilarating and quite a blast to have that rooster tail fly off the back. And he splashed me, I splashed him. We had a great time doing really tight turns. A few years before, we were on a cruise ship. And what I noticed is that when that cruise ship was trying to turn, it needed a long time to turn. It was not the same as a jet ski. The danger is when something's happening in your relationship, you want to do a jet ski turn, but it's really about turning the cruise ship. It's about taking your time and moving around, but making sure you're actually making progress. You can't take all the time in the world. You have to take the necessary time to make that turn around. So you're working on building the connection. Not asking the other person to build the connection, but working on building the connection from your side. The second thing I asked Nancy to do was to commit to commitment. And that really, for me, is a base core piece. That we make a commitment when we first get married. And that we need to honor that commitment. We have to commit to the commitment. We have to recommit ourselves to sticking to that, to being true to the vows we make, of making sure that we're following the path that's going to take our relationship to that next level. And commitment is what I consider to be the North Star of the relationship. You can always say, okay, you know what? I committed to being here. Now, let me be clear. I'm not saying that you should just stick it out and gut it out in a miserable relationship. But what you do is commit to building a relationship you both would treasure. That's the commitment you make. So I asked her to commit to commitment and live into that. So even when she was frustrated, even when she was feeling like giving up, she stuck to that. And in some ways, that's about committing to the plan. You create a plan for your relationship and you walk towards that by following your plan. The danger is if you're not committed to the commitment, when you're not feeling like it, you don't follow your plan. And the worst thing you can do is leave that plan behind. Once you've created that plan to save your marriage, you want to follow that plan. Commit to the commitment and follow that plan. Commit to the plan. The next thing I did was work with Nancy on how to rebuild the connection between them, of how to bring that deep sense of connection back in on a physical level, on an emotional level, and a spiritual level. Physical level is all about touch, not just about sex, but how you touch each other and how you show that place of connection with physical touch. Emotional is when you support each other in the emotional places of life. How, if you had a bad day, hearing that out. If you had a good day, celebrating it together, grieving together, and joining each other in the emotional world. And then a spiritual level of connection is when you're sharing about your hopes, your dreams, your aspirations, your beliefs, your understandings of the world, where somebody can know you in ways that nobody else can. That's a very deep level. So we talked about how to build the connection. And Nancy did it. It's not enough to have a plan. It's not enough to talk about building the connection. It's all about execution, of going out and doing it. And then I had Nancy make sure that she was consistently thinking in terms of being a we. You see, being a we is kind of a fuzzy concept for most people. And what they fail to realize is a lot of being a we happens in the minds of each person. It's not necessarily something that's always happening between them, but it's a feeling you carry with you that you've got their back and they've got your back. And you begin to treat things like that. And so if you're looking at money, how do we treat our money? How do we deal with the resources that we have? How do we make decisions that are best, not for you, not for me, but for us? How do we base our lives on moving forward our sense of being a we? And then I suggested that Nancy speak her husband's love language in ways that she may have missed all along. Gary Chapman and I had a long discussion, and there are links to different podcasts just below to get you going. If you're on my website, if you're on SaveTheMarriageBlog.com, you'll notice that there are links right below this so that you can find that. And one of those places is the interview I had with Gary Chapman, where he and I talked about what he means by love languages. If you're not familiar with that idea, and if you're not clear with that idea, please listen to that. Also, we had a piece in there where we talked about the six-month experiment. And this is what I suggested to Nancy, that she take 6 months and not expect to get a lot back from her husband. That's not the goal, because right now she's doing reparative effort. And so whenever she feels like, what about me? What am I getting out of this? What she realizes is that she's taking responsibility. She's stepping up. She's showing up in the relationship in ways that she hasn't before. So she began to speak her husband's love language. In fact, she narrowed it down to two that seemed key. One was the most prominent acts of service, and the second one were words of affirmation. And she began to do acts of service and give him words of affirmation, because he was also showing his love by doing things, and she had missed that before. So she began to speak his love language and interpret from his love language so that she understood what he was showing. So here's the key here. There's no magic bullet. Relationships that are in stagnation take some time. There's no magic formula. There's no secret handshake. There's no reverse psychology. There's no special little saying that's going to turn it around, except for hard work, except for taking the time to make sure you're moving in the right direction. So Nancy took the time to work on figuring out how to get unstuck. And it will take time, because it takes time for a relationship to get into trouble. It's going to take time for the relationship to get out of trouble. That's just the nature of what happens. It's like turning that cruise ship. It's got to take time. But as you move forward, as you find your plan, as you begin to do the same kind of things that Nancy did, you begin to see that this is not an immediate thing. And the only thing in your way is your fear that it can't happen. The only thing that's blocking you is your anxiety that it's got to happen now, that you've got to know it can happen now, that somehow it's got to happen today. Think not in terms of days or even weeks, but in terms of months of getting this going again, of unsticking it, of getting it out of stagnation. Once you're stuck in the mud, it takes a little bit more to get it pulled out. It's easy to kind of pull in the mud, but it takes some effort to pull something out of mud because it gets sucked into the pattern and gets stuck there. So you're beginning to think about those months of effort. Think in terms of 6 months. Give yourself the 6-month marriage experiment. You'll find the link to that just below, and figure out how you can take the ability to see the long term, not the short term, not the immediate stuff, but how you can get there if you keep your eyes on what you need to and you get defocused off of one very important thing, that pause button. Choose to never view your relationship as pausable. Instead, begin to move towards your spouse and move towards the relationship and nurture it with that connection. Your number one priority in the family is your marriage relationship. Treat it that way. Make sure that it's expressed. Don't get stuck on the other pieces that pull you away. If you do that, you create the circumstances where your relationship can come off the pause and move forward, not to stagnation, but to growth and to something that is probably hard to even fathom from here, but is a nurturing relationship that you'll treasure, you both will treasure for the rest of your life. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.